and get started?
Sure.
Yeah. So would you mind like first sharing a little bit about your upbringing? I'm not sure if you're a second or first generational Japanese American. So I'd love to hear a bit about like the cultural heritage or family traditions or values that you were instilled with like since childhood that might have shaped your perspective in school and also beyond.
Sure. So mother was a first generation Japanese, born, raised, educated in Japan. My father was a third generation Japanese in Hawaii.
Oh.
So I have both some Hawaiian heritage as well as Japanese. But my mother was the main person who raised me. So definitely a Japanese household, Japanese culture. And I grew up in the Bay Area, which during the 80s was still very, we'll say, Caucasian.
Yeah. So did it like influence the environments that you were in like in school? Was it mostly like Caucasian? You feel like you were accepted and part of the community, or there were also times where like there were some challenges?
Okay, so at my high school, as an example, we
Mm-hmm.
had an Asian club that was mostly not Asian, to give you any indication of what it was like. But growing up, I didn't see otherwise. I didn't necessarily see myself as different. I had friends from every background, black, white, Latino. I did love that part of it. I don't think I fully grasped the dynamics of what was going on until I was in college, and then realizing, oh, I understand now why I was treated certain ways. And it wasn't obvious per se. Obviously, I did get called derogatory terms here and there. I was bullied as a child. That was one of my reasons why I got into martial arts and learn to fight. But I think among my friend group, it never came about. In fact, in other ways, we used to make fun of each other for being Asian. That was kind of our thing.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear about like your experiences like being called derogatory terms and being bullied. That sounds very hard, like especially as a young kid. And is that why like you got into wushu? Because I heard like some of the interviews you had on YouTube and they're quite interesting, like how you picked it up and even like won some competitions thereafter.
Yeah, so for me, it was a matter of survival, right?
Oh.
So a lot of the other kids who joined who were Caucasian, they
Yeah.
joined because of Karate Kid, or they joined because they wanted to become a Power Ranger or a Ninja Turtle. For me, I wanted to be Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee did his martial arts training because he wanted to fight back, he wanted to defend himself. That was a main theme in a number of his movies and in his interviews, right? He didn't see himself as being Asian or Asian American or even a martial artist. He saw himself as being a human first. And that really resonated with me. And I happened to meet up with a head instructor who became like a mentor and a second father. So that really helped out a lot. Just going through the training, enjoying it, doing it well. My parents were also pretty, not just supportive, but they didn't let me quit. Like when it got hard, they didn't let me quit. So I stuck to it. And I at high school level, I realized even if I didn't love it all the time, it became a strategy for getting into college. Like if I do well at this, it was something I could put on my transcript. And so that's what it became.
Yeah, wow, that sounds like a very like deep story. And I'm sure like it also helped you like train yourself physically. And yeah, That's interesting. So, you mentioned your parents like supported you also doing like wushu, and I'm wondering if you have heard about like their migration story, when you were little, like what motivated them to come to the US, and like were there any opportunities or challenges that they faced while building a life in America?
Sure. Well, first off, cor quick correction. It's not Wushu. I was in Kenpo, so
Oh,
American
okay.
Kenpo. So I got my black belt from the late great grandmaster Ed Parker. He's the one who founded the Internationals, which is where Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, and all these other people came through. So yeah, quick correction on that. So for my parents, let's see. Man, you'd have to interview them for really some of the challenges they had. My mother tended to, I think she only had jobs for Japanese companies. She was like an accountant or financial person. I think she ended up going to community college and getting some classes in there. My father was a software engineer, so he worked at, I think AMD was one place. Yeah, some of the old Silicon Valley companies. I never heard him mention anything about being an Asian American in that during that time. So yeah, I couldn't comment on that.
Wow. So, like, did your father's software engineering background like motivate you to major in like mechanical engineering when you were at UCLA?
No, not necessarily. Like my parents were very good about letting me choose, but I also knew going to college, I had a goal. I'm going to graduate in the minimum amount of years. I want to get the best paying job I can so I don't have to be dependent on my parents. I did not want to move back home. That was the goal. So, with that, there were very few majors where you could go through school for 4-ish years, get out with a degree, and get a job that you could be financially independent. Engineering was one back then in the 90s. So for me, I wanted to either design cars or roller coasters. So for me, yeah, it was always in that creative technical intersection.
Yeah, that sounds very nice. And also you're very like determined coming into college, like having clear goals about your future. So I really respect that, like as someone who's currently in college right now. So like with your mechanical engineering background, you went to like visual effects and media. And like how did you find college back then? Like what because I know you have spoken at some UCLA events like hosted by Brune Entrepreneurship and also alumni activities. So did you feel that the environment has like changed in terms of diversity and representation?
Oh, absolutely. So back when I was in school, the majority of us were from California, if not Los Angeles. I was one of the few who was not from the Southern California area. So, as a good example of that, I was very surprised during my first year in the dorms how every weekend it would be a ghost town because everybody went home for the weekend. I did not expect that. So, it was very lonely on the weekends in the dorms. But nowadays, when I go to these alumni events, or I'm sorry, these, campus events where I'm meeting some of the current students, I'm really surprised at how the students are from all over the US and international. I'm meeting a lot of students who are from Florida or the East Coast or the Midwest even. That did not happen when I was at school. That was very rare. We did have a good amount of international students, especially in engineering. But for the most part, those who were American were probably from the West Coast, if not specifically California and Southern California.
Oh, wow. That's interesting to hear. Because yeah, I feel like UCLA is definitely on the rise like in recent years, and there are a lot of international students that I meet here as well. And mostly everyone is very open and welcoming. So I do very enjoy my time here. And like maybe
Good.
moving on to a little bit about your career. I know you worked with like the NFL, Sony, and Ticketmaster on like projects like The Life of Pi, and The Huntsman. So how did you feel working with people from different backgrounds or perspectives like within these companies? And did you find a sense of belonging in this industry?
In visual effects, absolutely loved it. Loved, met some of my best friends from all over the world. And even today, like I've met some, as an example, when I was at Sony, a lot of my team that I worked with was in Dallas, Texas, because that's where the headquarters of Funimation was and is now Crunchyroll. And I had the opportunity to go out to Dallas and meet them. Just by happenstance. It wasn't for business or anything. My wife had a conference there, so I just tagged along with her and got to have dinner with some of them. And it's wonderful to be able to meet people from various backgrounds and around the world. I really, really enjoyed it, and it to find common ground, to find things that you enjoy to do together outside of work. I loved it, and I still do. Like if I had the means, I would love to be able to fly and spend time, extended time, like a week or two with everybody I've worked with around the world. I think that would be great because I would be able to go to Australia, South Africa. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, it sounds fun to just like explore the world and spend time with people that you fun working with. And like in advancing to some like leadership roles throughout your career, like especially at these corporations, do you find like observations of some invisible barriers like facing Asian Americans, like what's called the bamboo ceiling? And are there times where you felt, well, actually your Japanese American identity like brought strengths to your work, like in terms of the perspective? But are there also times where there were like obstacles that you faced with?
Yes, to both. I think growing up in, if I can stereotype, right? It's growing up in a culture where we don't necessarily show all of our emotions, right? We have to be we where we are level-headed and remain calm. That has been very helpful. I've been in meetings where two executives have gotten into an argument and are yelling at each other, and I have to find a way to remain calm. Okay, how are we going to resolve this? How do we move forward? And it's been pointed out by many people that that is something that they lack, that they don't know how to do. So that's been very helpful. On the flip side, as you mentioned, this bamboo ceiling, and it is not something necessarily, it's not a hard physical door or wall or ceiling, right? It's subtle. And what I mean by that is if you were to start a company, or let me give this model. Like if I were to build a room and it's my room and I'd want only certain people to have access to help me do what I want to do, I'm going to bring people in that I trust, people I know. And that tends to be people who look just like them, right? They went to school with that person, they worked with that person. So those are the people who get access to that room. So for people who don't look like them, who didn't get to go to those schools or go work at those places, you won't get access for better or worse. So it's, as I said, I don't think it's on purpose, but I understand it from the perspective of, again, if I built this room, I want people who I can trust to be in here to help me do what I want to do. And these are those people, and they just happen to look like the person who built the room.
Yeah, that sounds quite sad though. So were there times where you felt like maybe you're an outsider to them? Like sometimes they have some inside jokes like among their own teams, or maybe like people that look similar to them have like similar experiences growing up. And yeah.
Yeah, they definitely do have similar experiences, stories. They do correlate. But I know, so when I finally got into the C-suite as a chief product officer, I did not feel that. I had a team that leadership team was purposely chosen, and I got to be a part of that, and I truly, truly enjoyed that experience.
Yeah, that is so great though. Yeah, that is very encouraging. And like, because you worked in films and media, so do you have any thoughts on like Hollywood's portrayal of like Asian Americans? So in recent years, there are films like Shang-Chi or like Everything Everywhere All at Once. So do you feel that it has started to open doors for like change regarding like some of the stereotypes or biases that were portrayed in films before, or there's still work to be done in capturing like the richness of all these stories of Asian Americans?
Yeah, I like to think that the door is opening to having some of our stories be told. I don't think we're quite there yet. I'd love to see, as an example, right? They're trying to decide who's going to be the next James Bond, right? And you never see an Asian American or an Asian name being mentioned, right? Or who are you going to cast for this lead part? And it goes to like a Tom Cruise, right? It's again, it's not going to go to an Asian. So I don't think we're quite there yet. Now, obviously, there are stories where it does work out, like Killing Eve with Sandra Oh. She could have been any, she anybody could have been cast in that main lead part, but she was, and she was amazing. She was fantastic. I don't know if you've seen that show, but highly, highly recommend it. And she was great.
Put out. Wow.
Yeah. So I do think you do have some slivers of things happening. Shang-Chi, I was not a true fan of the movie, but yeah, as far as the lead actor, like I'm a fan of his. I would support him. Simu Liu, I think he's great. I love the way he speaks for his heritage and his background and our community. And I love that. I think he's very well spoken. He's extremely talented as well. So yeah, I will support that 100%.
Yeah, definitely. He was also in Barbie, and I know he started like releasing some songs too as a singer, which is quite cool. It actually reminds of me like for Bruce Lee, like I actually watched one of the videos of him when he was young, and he was like very eloquent in that like sort of interview, and he said like to be kind like water, so that really inspired me too. And I feel that yeah, these are really role models out there.
Agreed.
Yeah, so like maybe moving on a bit to your mentorship journey right now. So you have like dedicated a lot of time to mentoring like different Asian American or Pacific Islander professionals to help them like advance in their careers or maybe like improve their physical and spiritual well-being. So like what inspired you to take on this role, and are there like any recurring themes that you address with your mentees?
Well, I love investing and I love leverage. And what I mean by that, in the financial realm, that obviously means I'm going to put a little bit of money down and I want huge returns. And I love doing that with people. I love finding people who, if I just give you just this a little bit, you're going to grow and be even better off for it. So usually I tell my direct reports that I work with, my goal is for you to be better than me, right? I don't want to just replicate myself. I want you to even be better and go out and do great things. And I wish I'm doing what I wish somebody had done for me, right? I wish somebody had been a manager. And don't get me wrong, I had really good supportive managers, but their goal was never to grow me and make me better. It was definitely just to do the job well. Which, I mean, that's at the bare minimum, yeah, that's what you ask for. But as I said, my goal is to invest in people and have them be better than me. And the only way I know how to do that is to mentor them and bring them along, coach them up. I love I love the whole theme of coaching. Like I've done online coaching and I love being able to impart not just knowledge, that's a part of it, but obviously wisdom and giving them a different frame of thinking. Again, I wish I had somebody who came alongside me when I was maybe early 20s. I could have made some different choices back then. Say, for instance, if I had invested in X versus Y, or just stuck my money in a savings account, if I had invested in X, not Twitter, but some variable, right? Something, and watched it grow over time, and just had this different mentality of what I could have been doing instead of, honestly, to be 100% transparent, I was afraid. Back when I was first a young adult, right? I'm making a little bit of money. I've got to pay this much for rent, this much for food, and the rest of it. I'm going to put it into savings because I'm afraid of the stock market. I'm afraid of investing because I don't want to lose it all. But if I had a mentor who would show me, like, oh, you're not going to lose it all. You might lose a little bit. Don't get me wrong. You got to get used to losing. But this is the possibilities of what could happen. And just to have that different mindset of what loss can be, right? You nowadays, I want to lose fast. I want to fail quickly because then I will learn and I will be able to implement different things that will help me in the long term. If I don't do that, I'll lose so much more further on down the road, and my arc to grow is stunted. So yeah, definitely want to do what I wish somebody could have done for me when I was younger.
Wow, that sounds very inspiring. Like, I can really feel your passion and love for helping others grow, and especially like younger people, like guiding them through to go even further than you did, and also like to navigate some of the challenges and pain that you experiences so that they could avoid those hurdles on their way. That's really nice of you, and I really respect that. So like, were you also inspired to do like your community work with Badger Missions because of like this passion to help people? Because I saw like you went all the way to Mexico to help like the people there build their homes and establish a community.
Yeah, so the Baja Missions is something that I joined, gosh, maybe about 8 years ago. And it went through my wife. My wife is the one who made the connection, and she has her own story, and I truly can't do it justice. It was a God thing, right? So she gets connected to it. She asked if I want to go. And at the time, I think I was unemployed. So I said, sure. Because I had never been on a missions trip before. So I said, oh, let's try this out. And I went and I loved it. I love this opportunity to be able to help these families who were really in dire situations. And it's really easy to say, well, they just can help themselves. They just need to go to college and, get a degree and get a well-paying job. Well, these are people who work in the fields because they have to, because that's the only way they eat, right? So how are they supposed to go to school? And when the kids are in middle school, and in Mexico, there's public school, but you still have to pay. It still costs you. So if you're a parent and you're trying to put food on the table, how can you pay for books and uniforms and all these things to send your child to school when they could be working in the fields making money to help feed the family? Right? So those are the decisions they have to make because they're day-to-day life and death decisions. So we come in and we say, okay, well, first, we're going to build you a house so that your kids don't die or don't have complications from lung respiratory infections, because that's the number one cause of death for children under the age of 4. I think it was like 17% of the kids there die because of lung infection, because they sleep on the dirt floor. They literally sleep on dirt floors. So that's number one. Let's build you a house so your kids can literally live. And then number two, let's send them to school. We will pay for everything. We'll pay for the books, the
Wow.
uniforms, the registration fees,
Yeah.
everything. We will provide an education center so they have internet access so they can do their homework. And what we've seen is when they buy in, now the whole family has to buy in. That's the
Yeah.
thing. It's not just the child. The whole family has to be aligned with this. And when it
Wow.
happens, it changes the trajectory of generations. These kids will then graduate high school. Many of them will go to college. We've graduated a doctor, a lawyer, nurses, teachers, bookkeepers. There's a Fender guitar warehouse office down there, and a number of them work in that office. And they're able to, again, change the trajectory of generations for an entire community, impacting an entire community. Because what happens instead, if they continue to work in the fields, is a lot of these kids will get pregnant by the time they're in high school, and they just perpetuate the life cycle of poverty over and over again. So this way we break it. This way we have an opportunity to change people's lives. And from a practical viewpoint, financial viewpoint, economic viewpoint, and a social viewpoint, that's what we're doing, right? I can get into the whole faith-based side of it. I don't know if that's what you're interested, but that's ultimately the reason why we do it. But most people understand the socioeconomics behind it.
I feel like this is really a huge project, and it definitely like influenced and helped a lot of the families there. Like, they're very unfortunate, but like during a time where you were also facing like difficulties, maybe like even desperation because like of the unemployment, but you were still like trying to help other people, and I find that very touching, and you have a very kind heart to like
I
help
hope
you
so.
others.
It's honestly, it's because of, and if I could say it's because of God and who Jesus is, right? It's through faith. Otherwise, I would just be another selfish jerk, right? It would be about me. It would be about growing my, I don't know, my empire, and putting my name out there. And it's for me, it's not.
So, like moving on to maybe some things about the Asian American community, like within this community, there are a lot of like cultures and perspectives. So, like throughout your career or throughout your life, were you connected with some of the organizations or networks within this community with like other Asian Americans that maybe have supported or inspired you? And like, what impact did these connections have on your journey?
I would say tangentially. So in college, I was involved in an AACF, or Asian American Christian Fellowship. And I took Asian American Studies classes also. And that was a lot of doing a lot of groundwork in terms of Asian American identity, right? What does that truly mean? So that's where I got to understand, oh, so when I was a kid, that's why that was happening. Or even today, right? Like I've had those situations where somebody tells me to go back to my country. Okay, now I started understanding that. And it also has to do with, so to get back to your question, so because of that small community, to be able to then be connected to, say, a JACL, right, Japanese American Civil Liberties Group, right, or I have a friend who gives tours at the Japanese American National Museum. I remember, so we took our kids to Manzanar, right, and touring that. And what my kids are like, why are we here? They had no understanding, and I don't know if they truly appreciated it, but for me to walk through and help them understand, hey, we know people who went through this, and given different situations, different circumstances, we may have been here. This is where we would have been if we were born in a different time. So just to help them understand history, because we don't cover it in the high school level, right? It's not, I think we got one sentence of when that happened. And then also to understand when, like, the whole Asian hate movement that's going on that we're seeing in, say, New York City or Oakland or San Francisco. Like, that could be my parents. That could be my grandparents, right? And it's super, super sad. Like, it devastates me to see that. So what do we do about it, right? So those are questions that I want to be part of. But also having a martial arts background is helpful, right? Like, and this is something that I'm also passionate about. Like, when I mentor people, I'm really big on, if I can help you visualize this, I'm really big on when you go into a room, any room, you should be competitive and be able to talk to subject matter with anybody in that room. So if you walk in and you're talking to Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, super, super rich dudes, right? Super rich people. I'm not going to be as rich as them. No way. But I should still be competitive. I should still be able to talk to them on a level in terms of business and finance, right? In terms of that.
That is on par with it.
Right. So physically, I should be able to walk into a room. I may not be the best fighter. I may lose, doesn't matter. But again, I should be able to be competitive in a physical confrontation so that I don't back down, right? If I've had people get up to me, walk up to me in my face, and like, do we really want to do this? And have the confidence to know and to be able to step up and say, this is a bad decision for us to make, and to walk away knowing something bad could have really happened here, and I'm choosing not to. And hopefully the other person sees the same way.
I also like recently learned about the Japanese American incarceration like through the Asian American Studies class, and that was really sad. So it was there were a lot of like unfair treatments and exclusion acts that were passed to sort of like discriminate against Asian Americans back then. So it's great that you're like bringing your children to also like reflect on this whole journey and like know more about history. So like as a father or a husband, do you think that family has also influenced your perspective in life? And are there any like lessons that you find yourself passing down to your children? And like when you see them grow up, do you draw any parallels like from their childhood to yours?
I definitely talk to my children about it when we watch TV or movies, and I point out the stereotypical Asian character, or sometimes there's no Asian. Oh, am I frozen? Can you still hear me? Okay, there we go.
Yes.
When there's no Asian characters at all, I'll make the joke like, oh, I guess we don't exist in this world, right? And it happens quite often. So my kids know how I stand, where I stand on that. I don't think my wife experiences it as much. So to juxtapose her experience, my wife is a first generation Korean American, but she grew up in a high school to open up her yearbook, you had to look for the Caucasian people, right? As opposed to my yearbook, you had to look for the people of color. Right. So it is flip-flopped. So she didn't really grow up with this notion of being a minority, right? A person of color. She was the majority. So she doesn't go through this as much. She's also one, she has all sisters in her family, and all my brother-in-laws, they're all Caucasian. I'm the only Asian brother-in-law. So that's kind of funny too. And I make jokes often of how about my brother-in-laws, or even about my sister-in-laws, and how their bananas, or they're whitewashed, or what have you, right? But it's all tongue-in-cheek, right? It's all fun. But yeah, I do try to make it a point to point out certain things to my kids, both seriously and jokingly.
That's very interesting, like family dynamic, and very cool to know about like her experience, which is different than yours, and like Every Asian American has a different like experience growing up. So like given your experiences like throughout your career or like personal life, what advice would you give to like young Asian Americans that are facing barriers like the bamboo ceiling? And do you think there are particular strategies or mindsets that they could equip themselves with to navigate these spaces?
Yeah, number one, I would say get a mentor who's made the mistakes. So there's two ways you're going to learn, right? Two ways you're going to get wisdom. Number one is to make the mistakes yourselves, or find somebody else who's made those mistakes and tells you which direction to go. So the second one will save you a lot of time and money and angst, right? So find someone who has been there, done that, and can help you, right? So I'm huge on mentorship. I have mentors still. And what I mean by that is they're not necessarily official. Like I don't claim them to be mentors per se, and they don't claim themselves as mentors. But as an example, I have a friend that I used to work with, and he is my mentor in terms of some of my financial strategies. Right. So without that, he would just be a former coworker friend that I still stay connected with. But because he has this skill set that I don't, I've been learning from him. And he enjoys our relationship because I ask him questions. I make mistakes still, and I come up with questions that he makes him think, and it makes him better. So then when it actually comes up to him, now he knows what to do, or he's already thought about it beforehand. So he's ahead of the curve. So yeah, having those type of relationships is huge. Like I can't tell you how much I wish I had done that or much, much earlier. It wasn't as much of a thing, I think, back when I was growing up. I think you still had this notion of I could do it on my own. Like if I just do a great job, I'll be recognized and I'll be promoted up the ranks. Well, the real world doesn't work that way, right? School is such a false model for that, right? If I do well at class, I do all the schoolwork, do well on the tests, I get promoted. And then after a while, I get a certificate, I get a diploma. That's not the way the world works. Like the real world is like, you do a great job. Oh, we don't need you anymore. You're getting laid off, right? So it's very, very different. Oh, you're doing a great job. Oh, somebody else is now your boss, right? So you have these situations where, wait, I knocked it out of the park. I killed it. It's in my reviews. You said I was doing a great job. What's going on? And you don't know why. And some people will never tell you.
Yeah, I feel like it's definitely what you said is very true. Like in terms of meritocracy, like the real world or the society maybe is not like that. Like you don't just work hard and get the results that you want to have. Did you also like experience some of those things or struggles yourself? And like usually, like what helped you stay strong and move forward when you experience moments like that, when you just felt like, oh, you put in the work, but then it doesn't turn out what it, you expected it to be.
Absolutely. Yes, it has happened. I've seen situations where I've gotten the great reviews, I've delivered, I've done all the great things. I've done everything I was asked to above and beyond. And then somebody else gets promoted ahead of me, or they bring in somebody new instead of considering somebody internal, right? I've seen it happen. At that point, you have two decisions. Or you have a decision to make, basically two directions. Do you stick with it? Do you think that you can still move up? Is that path still available to you there? Or do you jump ship and go somewhere else? My experience is I had to go somewhere else. As an example, I was a senior manager. I saw other people getting promoted. I had already been talking previously about becoming a director. It was on the table. I was given, these are the steps. I did them and it didn't happen. So I ended up interviewing around, ended up getting a senior director role. at a startup. Now, very risky, right? Still had to take the risk. But how else am I going to get this opportunity? How else am I going to get this experience? If I'd stayed put, I never would have had that experience. So I made the jump, became a senior director, got promoted to chief product officer. It didn't last because the company ended up going under because we lost all of our funding as a startup. But I would 100% do it all over again because where else am I going to get that experience? Now I've had that experience that I otherwise never would have gotten.
Yeah, I feel like it definitely took a lot of courage for you to take that step. And it's sad that like sometimes you're promised something, but they don't really give you that. So that must have been like a great disappointment, but you still like tried to turn that risk into something that gave you a very fruitful experience afterward, like at the startup, even though it might be like harder in terms of like what you have to execute, because there are a lot of things that you have to consider. Like when working on a startup, you're more like making decisions and like taking those risks yourself. So thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, that's very inspiring to me. And like if throughout your life or like your career, how did you feel about staying true to yourself, like when you compared to when you were young and then growing up and like taking up roles in the family and starting your own family? Like, what does it mean to you to stay consistent from the beginning, and how do you stay true to your goals or some of the life philosophies that you live by?
I think that becomes easier as you get older because it solidifies more. There, your time becomes more limited, your energy becomes more limited, so you have to be able to be focused on what is important to you. So I'm realizing now that the type of, well, okay, if I back up even more, the with the time I have, say if I have free time, I want it to be not just meaningful, but again, I want it to be investment, right? So it's something that I get a tremendous amount out of. As an example, if I watch a TV show, it better be a pretty darn good show. If I'm going to waste, if it's, I don't know, like your typical, I don't know where you watch Korean dramas. My wife and I watch Korean dramas.
Oh,
So if
yeah.
I'm one or two episodes in, so now I'm spending an hour and a half to 2 hours in, and I'm just not getting it, I'll just cut the cord. My wife, on the other hand, will stick with it. And sometimes it works out, right? Sometimes she'll say, that would actually turn out to be a really good show. So then I will actually go back and watch it. But for me, yeah, 15 minutes into a movie or one or two episodes in, if I'm just not connecting to it, I'll jump. I'll. So again, in terms of being having the integrity in terms of what I'm working on or what I'm doing, kind of the same thing. Like I'm realizing if I'm working on something, I'm like, oh, this is not truly what I'm passionate about, not very interested in this, then I'm more likely to pull away eventually or give myself an out so that I can work on something that I am passionate and interested in.
I feel like that's very nice, like knowing what you want and like investing the time that you have into something that's truly valuable to you is very important. Like for the TV shows, I feel like if it doesn't really connect, there's still a lot of options available. So you don't really have to stick to it and just
Exactly.
like see what turns out best for you. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing all of the experiences and stories that you have with me today. It's like it really means a lot to me, and I have learned a lot from you as well. I've actually like heard some of your interviews before on YouTube, like, and like the way that you navigate diverse adversity and try to like pass that on to other people is really touching to me. And I feel like you must be a very like good father to your children as well.
You'd have to ask them. I hope so. I don't think, yeah, that's another thing. Like there's a lot of things I wish I had done differently as a father, but you can't go back. right? And
Right,
that's part of it. So now you just have to do the best job you can now. But yeah, there are, again, if I had a mentor back then, I could have done things a little bit differently.
Yeah, I feel like having a mentor, like even though if I haven't met you, but actually like from this conversation alone, I would learn a lot from you. So I feel like, yeah, mentorship is definitely a very important aspect, and having someone who has walked the path that you would like to walk would be really valuable, because they can teach you like that firsthand advice that they have.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you th again, if you think of it financially, if you had invested a dollar today in something and then watched it ebb and flow, but grow over time, how much money will you have in 10, 15, 20 years? As opposed to if you don't do anything with that dollar today, because you're fearful or you're not sure or you put it in the wrong place and you wait 10, 15, 20 years down the road, you see how
Then you
much
have
further behind you are. So that just represents, it can represent knowledge, wisdom, direction, anything.
Yeah, thank you so much, Eric. That's yeah, I would keep that in mind. Like, just not be fearful and just do what you think is important and yeah, on the table. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Yeah, my
thank
pleasure. Hope it helps.
you.
Let me know what happens with this project. I'd love to see
Yeah,
how
of
it
course.
progresses and what your final result
I
is.
think I'll just like work on the paper and then we'll submit it like a couple of weeks later, and then after that I'll share a copy with you, and thank you so much again. I really appreciate it
You're
and
welcome.
all
Love
your
to read it
time.
over. And yeah, wish you the best on the rest of your class and your studies.
Yeah, thank you, and very best wishes to you and your family as well. Thank
Thank you
you.
much. Okay.
Okay, take care.
You too.